So, welcome, welcome. I hope everyone's having a wonderful Tuesday. Today, we're going to try and explore a question that I've been thinking about for the past 7 years. Now, admittedly, there were a few breaks. I took a nap. I had a snack once in a while. But this question bothered me for a very long time. And this year, it sort of came together. I kind of gotten a real sense of how to approach it. The question started when I was a student in Yeshiva University. It was during finals, and I was just reading the Parsha. I was reading through Shmos and Va'era, and I came across a pasuk that I'd never seen before. I think they must have added it in, you know, in and around, you know, when I started college. It for sure wasn't there any earlier. And it goes like this. Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are sitting present at Har Sinai, arguing over whether or not Moshe should be the one to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. And ultimately, Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be, to acquiesce. He seems to say, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'll take them out. And God says, okay, here's the game plan. And he pulls out the whiteboard and he starts writing up the play. And he says, I want you to go to Paro. And I want you to tell Paro, let my people go. And Steven Spielberg's excited. And Cecil DeMille's excited. They're going to make movies, Ten Commandments, Prince of Egypt. One problem, though. Moshe doesn't say, let my people go. We've seemingly grown up. We always thought that Moshe asked Paro to let the Jewish people go. But that's actually not what Moshe asks. He says, let my people go for 3 days. Let my people go and worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the desert. Let us worship Hashem in the desert for 3 days. Now, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe that we're going to Israel, that we're going to the promised land, we're going to the land that our forefathers were promised, why in the world is Moshe Rabbeinu asking Paro for just a 3-day furlough, a 3-day vacation in the desert? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu basically saying we want to take off Memorial Day weekend instead of working this the entire year straight? It's a funny question, and not just a funny question. I think it's actually kind of fundamental to who we are as Jewish people and what we're celebrating right now, because we're celebrating the redemption from Mitzrayim. We're celebrating the Jewish people's leaving slavery in Egypt. But the whole conversation between Moshe and Paro seemingly starts out as a lie, a hoodwink, a chicanery. Moshe Rabbeinu is not being totally upfront, not being totally honest with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which, quite honestly, is somewhat disturbing. Now, I might be more sort of inclined toward saying that, you know, how could God do this? It's so disturbing. Ordinarily, I'm not so inclined, but this seems to really bother me. This seems to be a real problem that Moshe approaches Paro at the request of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asks for something that we have no intention of fulfilling, that we're not intending to only go for 3 days. We're planning on leaving Egypt and never coming back. This is a prophecy that was foretold to Avraham Avinu. What in the world is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what in the world is Moshe doing asking for just 3 days? So we're going to explore a few different approaches to try and understand this. We're not going to see every approach, but we'll see a few. We'll see a number of them. These approaches are gathered from, you know, just looking at basically all the Mefarshim that exist on this topic. But I'm inspired most of all by, I guess we'll say Rabbi Menachem Liebtag and Rabbi Ari Kahn and actually Rabbi Ari Kaplan at the end. We'll get there when the time comes. So our first sort of way of wrapping our minds around this is effectively that Paro had this coming, that this was appropriate, this was the right thing to do, because Paro basically tricked the Jewish people into becoming slaves. And so if Paro is going to trick the Jewish people into becoming slaves, then the way that the Jewish people should leave their slavery should also be through some sort of chicanery, through some trickery. And so the Abarbanel says that, I don't know what we're complaining about. I don't know what we're worried about. This is totally the right thing to do. And so the Abarbanel says, to some extent, it's like a mita k'neged mita. The Or HaChaim jumps in and says it more explicitly, that Paro was consistently tricking the Jewish people, trying to get them to stay longer. Even when he's letting the people go, he's really just saying like, oh, you can leave with these people, you can leave with these people, but you're not all allowed to go. I'm not letting the entire Jewish people go. And so the Or HaChaim says that this trickery that Moshe is presenting to Paro is actually, to some extent, a kapara, a How do you say kapara? Usually in a shiur when I can't think of a translation, someone can tell me. But how do you say kapara? It's an atonement. Thank you. It's an atonement for Paro's misdeeds. Paro acted inappropriately, and now he's going to sort of, you know, get punished for that those misdeeds. And so this actually comes up, this is fascinatingly, both in Jewish history and in the Gemara. In the Gemara, there's a story in Sanhedrin where Alexander the Great is talking to the Jewish people, and Alexander the Great is trying to mediate a fight between the Egyptians and the Jews. And the Egyptians basically are complaining to the Jewish people that they stole all their kalim. What's happening? The Jewish people, before they leave, they ask to borrow, nice gold and silver from the Egyptians. And so the Egyptians say, oh yeah, sure, take it, no problem. We want you to leave anyway. This whole 10th plague thing was really unpleasant for us. Please, please, please take our kalim. You're welcome to borrow them. And if the Jewish people are leaving for just 3 days, that means they're going to get them back on Monday, on Tuesday. They're going to be back very soon. And maybe when the Egyptians gave away their kalim, they didn't actually intend to give them away permanently, but just to borrow them. And when someone borrows and doesn't give it back, we call that stealing. So the Egyptians are complaining to Alexander the Great, are complaining that the Jewish people stole from them. And so the Jewish people make a very compelling argument. They say, oh, you are upset that we stole from you. Tell you what, we'll give you back the money that we stole from you for the nice garments and the kalim, and why don't you pay us for 210 years of slavery? And then the Egyptians sitting at the table were like, maybe we'll just forget this whole thing. Maybe we don't need to have to talk about it. And actually, Menachem Begin, thousands of years later, in Israeli history, went in amid discussions with the Egyptians, had the same problem. And the Egyptians were like, well, hold on. If we're going to talk about the supremacy of the Bible and the biblical stories, then maybe you should be paying for the things that you stole from the Egyptian people. And Menachem Begin was like, really? You really think that if we're going to be, squaring out payments over the past over thousands of years ago, we're going to be paying you? Because we were slaves for 210 years. And at which point the Egyptians kind of gave up. They stopped the conversation and moved on to something else. And so Kodesh Baruch Hu is sort of giving Paro his just desserts. You tricked the Jewish people tricked you back, and that's how they're going to leave. That's sort of one approach from the Or HaChaim and the Abarbanel. The Rashbam looks at it very differently. The Rashbam looks at it and says, this was just practical. There's a conversation that's taking place between Moshe Rabbeinu and Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Moshe Rabbeinu is basically saying, God, I don't know what you think was going to happen. Paro's never going to let the Jewish people go. And actually, Shlomo Volbe says that the language of 3 days was not meant to be literal. It didn't actually mean it's only going to be 3 days, but that Paro would never say yes to anything else. So it had to just be a 3-day offer. And the Rashbam basically says it. He tracks the psukim. We're not going to look at it right now. We can do it some other time. But he actually tracks the psukim in a conversation where Moshe is saying, God, I can't do this. And God says, don't worry, I'll be with you. Ekia asher ekia. And then Moshe says, well, what do you want me to say to Paro? How am I supposed to go to Paro and ask for this? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, Moshe, here's the game plan. You're not going to say, let the Jewish people leave. You're not going to say, I want you to accept the sovereignty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All you're going to say is, can you please let the Jewish people go for just 3 days? And if it's just going to be for 3 days, Paro can say yes. That's palatable to give your slaves a weekend off. And so Moshe says, okay, fine. That's going to be our plan. And it's not going to be anything more than that. We're not going to try for anything beyond just a 3-day request. And so the Rashbam says that this wasn't lying per se. This was telling Paro what he needed to hear. The Emes LeYaakov, who's very focused on Pshat, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, says something similar. He says Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't lying per se. Only that Moshe Rabbeinu was just saying what was only feasible, what was only necessary to hear. And so in that sense, we learn sort of a foundational lesson that Kadosh Baruch Hu sort of always gives us an opportunity to say yes, always wants us to be able to accomplish our goal. We have the Rashi in Parshas Kitisa about an Eishes Tefas Torah, that nothing in the Torah exists that's going to be too strong for our Yetzer Hara to accomplish. What that means in the reverse is that, oh, this one area that seems to be a massive leniency that an Eishes Tefas Torah is allowed to soldiers, that implies that every other mitzvah in the Torah is something that we can actually accomplish, something we can fulfill. And so while our first lesson taught us that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is always going to sort of return the favor, is always going to treat someone the way that they've treated others, this lesson is teaching us that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is always going to give us an opportunity to win, always going to give us an opportunity to accomplish. And there's a move that effective educators will sometimes use in tests, that the first couple answers on a test will be easy so that the student feels like, oh, I can get this. I know I know these answers. I'm going to do a good job. And then when they continue, they feel like they can do it. Sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to give us like a little bit of an easy win so that once we've sort of passed that strata, once we've accomplished that goal, we can move on to something even greater. And we'll have the koach, the ability to be able to do it. And so a Kodesh Baruch Hu, according to the Rashbam, is giving Paro that same opportunity, giving Paro that sort of that same chizuk that, Paro, you can do this, that you're not held back, you're not restricted from successfully letting the Jewish people go. I'm going to give you a little easy, very, very simple goal, very, very simple request. All you have to do is let the people, Jewish people, out of Egypt for just 3 days. But even that was too much for Paro, and he said no, he would not listen. In psychology, it's called the foot in the door phenomenon. We're not going to get into all the details, but effectively, the point in psychology is that if I want to get you to do something, then the best way for me to get you to do it is to just sort of convince you of a little thing, something that's not so hard, something not so difficult. And once you agree to this little thing, then gradually, over the course of time, you'll agree to much, much bigger things. And so that's sort of the second approach we're going to take from the Rashbam, that it's a practical approach. Paro couldn't have listened otherwise. And the Netziv points out something similar, but that basically, it's unbelievable for Paro to ever think that the Jewish people could leave. What, you're going to send an entire nation of slaves into the desert? And they're going to travel from Egypt to Israel? Admittedly, it's not so far, but it's far enough that it's like a ridiculous thing to ever conceive of. Nobody would think, anyone who you ask, could never conceive of the notion that the Jewish people could, as an entire nation, walk out of Egypt and arrive in Israel safely. They're slaves, they're not necessarily organized, and there's no food. No one knew that Man was coming. No one knew the capabilities of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And so the Netziv says that in order to give Paro the possibility of saying yes, he had to make an offer, not just that he could handle, that was palatable from him as a leader, but just as a human being. Rabbi Menachem Liebtag has an interesting insight. He says that we know Jews, and Jews talk. And so if the plan was, okay, Jews, we're planning on leaving Egypt, we're getting out of here, but we're only going to ask Paro for a three-day journey, but don't tell anyone. What are the chances that the Jewish people can really keep their mouths shut, that no Egyptian would find out that this is all some hoax, and that really the Jewish people were planning on leaving forever? So says Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, no, from the beginning, the Jewish people and Paro all heard just 3 days. They didn't hear anything else because the Jewish people, even if they knew more, they wouldn't have believed it. And if Paro heard that the Jewish people were planning on leaving forever, he never would have believed them. What are the chances that the entire nation could leave? And so why was Moshe not worried about this little secret of theirs getting out? Because it was a laughing matter. Who cares? The Jews will leave for 3 days. They could handle it. It's fine. But they're not going to be able to go any further than that. And so the Netziv says that this was a specific need, that it had to be Derech Shloshos Yomim. Otherwise, it wouldn't have worked. And so that's sort of our second approach, that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us an opportunity to enter into Kedusha in an easy, palatable manner before it sort of blows up, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then we have a second approach of the Netziv. And the second approach of the Netziv was effectively that Paro was not going to be a full believer in Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's crazy to think that Paro, who spent his whole life basically worshiping himself and telling the entire nation to worship him, would ever recognize that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was the Melech Malchei Melachim, that Kadosh Baruch Hu was more powerful than he. But maybe, a Kadosh Baruch Hu would let the Jewish people go and worship a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe Para would say, okay, you know what? I'm obviously a very chashiv God. I'm really, really important. I am a deity. But God, Hashem, is also a deity. And I'm going to let the Jewish people worship their God. They don't have to worship me. And so in addition to this being a practice in culling his and curbing his ego, it would also be an opportunity for Para to display that God is king and that I'm not the be-all and end-all. And so the Nitziv says that Paro was given the opportunity to let the Jewish people go, and because this was sort of the step necessary. This was the only thing that Paro could accomplish. And more than that, the Jewish people needed this sort of incremental option. The Jewish people could not have imagined leaving Egypt for more than just 3 days. They couldn't have imagined being a free people. There are lots of examples we could use, and this might not be the best, but if anyone's familiar with the movie Shawshank Redemption, a story of someone stuck in jail and sort of the lifestyle that develops for people who are in jail for a very long time, it's very, very hard to leave jail. And unfortunately, that movie has a story of someone who has such a difficult time leaving jail, of no longer being a prisoner, no longer being enslaved, if you will, that he takes his own life and commits death by suicide. But then it's simply saying that the Jewish people, even, not just Paro, the Jewish people needed this sort of incremental mental idea of maybe we'll just leave Egypt for 3 days. Maybe we don't actually have to be slaves, even though that's been our whole life. And so that's the way the Nitziv approaches it, and the Rabbeinu Bachaye takes this and sort of zooms out. And he says, in general, this is a growth opportunity for the Jewish people. The Jewish people were going to be mekabel the mitzvos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give them the mitzvos? Well, if we look in Parshas B'Shalach, they get three mitzvos. They get Parah Aduma, they get Shabbos, and they get... Shouldn't I'm forgetting now. Parah Aduma, Shabbos, and Kivudah V'Eim. And if we look at, the Rabbeinu Bachaye points out in 3:18, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Avram Avinu to bring Yitzchak as a sacrifice, as an Ola, he doesn't say, Avram, I want you to take Yitzchak and kill him. He says, Kachna, es pincha, es yirchicha, asher ahavta, es Yitzchak. Takes numerous steps to sort of warm Avram up to the point where he'll be able to hear, he'll be able to accept the ol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking from him. And so Rabbeinu Bachaye says the Jewish people needed to hear this. This was the general way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates, that mitzvos are incremental. Mitzvos happen gradually over the course of time and don't get thrown on us all at once. And so in our own growth, when we look at this story, when we think about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu asked for just 3 days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to ask for just 3 days instead of a whole redemption, because in order to grow, you need to take small, little baby steps. And that's approach number three. Thus far, we've seen three different approaches. So I guess we could call it a justice approach, a midah keneged midah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it doesn't let anything slide. And because Paro did not let the Jewish people go, and he tricked them into becoming slaves, then he deserved to be tricked for them to leave, and so Moshe asked for just 3 days instead of telling him that we're really going to leave. That's approach number one. Approach number two from the Rashbam was that this was practical. Nobody could ever believe that anything beyond just leaving for 3 days. And so the best way for Am Yisrael to end up leaving was to ask for just 3 days instead of asking for a full redemption. And as we just discussed, this third approach, that it's a growth focus, that in order for the Jewish people to be able to appreciate this, in order for the Jewish people to be willing and interested and capable of leaving Egypt and going to Eretz Yisrael and accepting the Torah and becoming avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu instead of to Paro, they needed this sort of incremental slow growth, similar to the way we see in many, many other instances throughout the Torah. Now, our last approach I find most interesting, most compelling, and Achron Chaviv. It's from the Chizkuni, and then a piece from Rav Soloveitchik, as quoted by Rabbi Aryeh Khan. The Chizkuni says, also in 3:18, in Derech Shloshes Yomim, he says, the Jewish people meant it. Moshe Rabbeinu meant it. Moshe Rabbeinu legitimately was going to just go for 3 days. Actually, the Emes Yaakov addresses this approach also, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, page 255 in his Emes Yaakov. But starting with the Chizkuni, with the Rishon, He says Moshe Rabbeinu was being totally honest. There was no chicanery. There was no lying. There was no trickery going on here. Moshe wanted just 3 days. Didn't want anything more than that. But then we got to ask, why? Why just 3 days? What would just 3 days of a vacation accomplish? Well, imagine, if you will. This piece is based on Rav Soloveitchik, as quoted by Rabbi Ari Kahn. Imagine if Am Yisrael really had left for just 3 days. If Par had said yes. Because anytime you're going to ask a question, you have to be willing for the answer to be yes. You know, the first rule in trial law is that you never ask a question you don't know the answer to. My Rabbi Ravina likes to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was the best lawyer in town. So Moshe couldn't ask for 3 days if he didn't really want 3 days. Moshe couldn't have said, I want to leave for 3 days and then run away. That would have been totally terrible. That would have been awful. That would have been a legitimate lie in the outright. And the formation of Kadosh Baruch Hu's people, of Am Yisrael, would have been founded on a complete lie. So the Chizkuni says, and the Rav Soloveitchik says, Moshe meant it. But what was the game plan? What were we actually trying to accomplish? This, I think, is so wonderful, so incredible, so mind-blowing even. I hope that we'll have the opportunity in the next 8 minutes to explore it as necessary. If not, then I have a Shiur on Wari Torah, I think with the same title. And the last 15 minutes are very, very worthwhile. I can't say the entire thing is, but at least the last 15 minutes on this topic are awesome. Rav Soloveitchik says that what would have happened on a 3-day journey? What would have happened if the Jewish people just left and served the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the desert, on this mountain, on Har Sinai, for 3 days? Then they would have come back after an amazing Shabbaton, best Shabbaton you could ever imagine, with the slow Shira or the ebbing, whatever terminology they used back then. L'chora, it was ebbing. I'm an Tzitzwa guy. But they would be lit up. They would be excited. They would be inspired beyond belief. And the entire Jewish people would have returned with that inspiration. And they would have continued their slavery for another 190 years. They would have done a full 400 years in Egypt, just like it was prophesied by Avraham Avinu, says the Amos Yaakov, that yes, maybe we could start counting 400 years from Yitzchak down, when Yitzchak's born, all the way until the Jewish people leave, but maybe the Jewish people weren't supposed to be in servitude for just 210 years. Maybe they were supposed to be in Egypt for a full 400 years, and they left early because Paro said no. They left early because Paro didn't let them. But what was really the plan? The real plan was that the Jewish people would go to the desert after about the halfway mark, after 210 years, go and get inspired, be so excited about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, about ethical monotheism, if you will. And they'd come back and they'd teach the people. They would teach the Egyptians. They would come back and they would be so excited to share ethical monotheism with the Egyptian people. And the Egyptians would start to learn. They'd start to pick up on this notion that maybe paganism is not the right move. Maybe Paro is not really a god. Maybe instead of worshiping the Nile and the sun, we should worship the entity, the deity that encompasses all of them. The Melech Malchei Melachim, Elohim, referring to the master, the great Kael, the great power that exists in the world. Maybe Kadosh Baruch Hu is actually the one that's worth worshiping, and not any of these small little powers that exist in our lives. And so if that's the case, that the Jewish people would influence the Egyptians, then that could have a tremendous effect. Now, before I get to the effect that it would have, let's just look back for a moment. Let's look back at Yosef, points out Rabbi Kahn. Because if we look back at Yosef, then we see an example of someone who had HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his lips, who was always talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yosef HaTzadik, when he was in prison for 12 years, was talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone recognized that Yosef connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in one meeting between Yosef and Paro, Paro says, "Ah, God knows what he's doing. God knows what he's talking about. Yosef, he's the man. He's the one who should be leading the charge, who should be guiding us through these years of plenty and through these years of famine, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on his lips, because he's connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu." And in that little conversation, Paro recognizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has what to offer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is great. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is powerful. HaKadosh Baruch Hu might know more even than me, Paro. So if in one conversation with Yosef, Paro was influenced, Imagine what the entire Jewish people could do in the land of Egypt over the course of almost 200 years. Now, yes, Yosef might have been very charismatic, and Yosef was an extraordinary tzaddik, extraordinary Eved Hashem. But even if all of the members of Am Yisrael are not as tremendous, as impressive as Yosef at tzaddik, over the course of so much time, they could get there. They could influence the Egyptians. And what happens if the Jewish people influence the Egyptians? We know that at the time, the Egyptian people were the in charge of the world. They were the center of the universe. Everybody came to Egypt, particularly during times of famine, but in general, in order to for art, for history, for entertainment, Egyptian society was the sort of the center, the superpower of the world. And so if the superpower of the world, if the Egyptians became monotheists, recognized the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then what do you how do you think that would impact the rest of the world? What would the other countries end up doing? Maybe, says R. Soloveitchik, they would learn from the Egyptians. Maybe by the Jewish people going to the desert for just 3 days, they would influence the Egyptians, and the influence the Egyptians would then influence the rest of the world, and the whole world would become monotheists. They wouldn't become Jewish per se, they would become monotheists. They would recognize the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because I'll tell you something, and this might sound controversial, but I think it's pashut, it's not, and I'll explain. The Jewish people are bidyeved. They're not lechachila. The Jewish people should never have existed. God did not want the Jewish people to exist. Kadosh Baruch Hu loves us, and we are the righteous of the goyim. We are Kadosh Baruch Hu's firstborn. But God does not want the Jewish people to exist. What does God want? God wants an entire world of Jews, of people who recognize that a Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And I'll prove it to you. Let's look back, not 3,000 years ago, but 5,780 years ago. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates two people, Adam and Chava. And what are Adam and Chava's job? What are they supposed to do? What's their one mitzvah? Don't eat from this tree. And why should you not eat from this tree? Because if by not eating from this tree, you're going to recognize that I, Kadosh Baruch Hu, run the world, that I, Kadosh Baruch Hu, have what to say, I, Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the only thing that's worth worshiping, not my own desires, not any other God, other seeming power that exists, only me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Adam and Chava don't listen. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll try with their children. And over the course of 10 generations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying, and he wants people to be monotheistic. He wants them to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. But they don't listen. So he says, okay, wipe the slate clean. I'm going to try again. I'm going to try with Noach and his children. And so once again, after 10 generations, Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying, Kadosh Baruch Hu is hoping, please, can Bnei Adam, can mankind, human beings, recognize that I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that I am the Ribono Shel Olam, I created the world, and there are no powers that exist that are worth worshipping except for me. And once again, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives up, and he says, it's not going to work. The world is not ready, is not willing to see that I alone am worth worshipping. So I'm going to give up on the world. I'm no longer going to try to get the entire world to be monotheists, to get the entire world to worship me. I'm going to try with one man. I'm going to try with Abraham. And Abraham and Sarah and their children are going to be this one nuclear nation that's going to recognize and worship me. And through them, monotheism will spread to the world. But instead of trying with the whole world, I'm just going to try with this nation. We'll call them Jews. But the job of the Jewish people is to spread monotheism, to spread a Kadosh Baruch Hu to the entire world. And ultimately, what's the goal? Goal, as the Navi Yeshaya says, we say it at the end of, we say it in Slichos, and I think we say it at the end of Fast Day, the Haftorah. The Haviyosim El Har Kachi, that everyone's going to come to my mountain, to the base of Midash, Visim Akhtim Beis Midashi, Olo Sehem Vizif Kahem L'Ratzon Al Mizbechi, that we're going to bring offerings, on the altar of the Mizbeach. Ki Beisi, because my house, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, my house, the Beis HaMikdash, Beis Tefillah will be a house of prayer, L'chol Ha'amim, to the entire world, to every nation. God doesn't want Jews. God wants the entire world to be monotheistic. God wants the entire world to recognize that a Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the show, and that because of Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the show, we have responsibilities. We're supposed to act accordingly. What we're celebrating, what we're commemorating on Pesach, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu chose us to be the leaders, the messengers to the whole world that he's in charge. And if Paruha just said yes to just this 3-day request, then we would have made it. We would have gotten to that point. We would have been able to spread that monotheism to the whole world. And maybe, maybe, this 3-day request that we see in Sefer Shmos is God's last-ditch effort. Maybe. This is my own idea. And it might be wrong. I don't know. But maybe, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I tried with Adam and Chava and their children, and it didn't work. I tried with Noach and his children, and it didn't work. Now I'm trying with Avraham Avinu. Before I give up and say, just the Jewish people will worship just the Jewish people will worship Kodesh Baruch Hu and try and spread monotheism to the whole world, one last effort to get the entire world. Before we go to a game where we're talking thousands of years later, before we go to the long-term plan, in just this short period of time, I want to try and get the Jewish people to be the conduit to convince the Egyptians, and the Egyptians the conduit to convince the rest of the world that I am the true God. Maybe this was a Kodesh Baruch Hu's plan all along. That to make a small 3-day request for Paro to accept the Kodesh Baruch Hu upon himself and spread that to the whole world and accomplish the goal of creation. I hope this has been interesting. I hope this has been thoughtful. We're out of time. We can explore this further. I'm always happy to talk to someone about this. So please, we've got some time these days. So feel free to reach out. We're going to wrap our Facebook Live share up for now. But Ismail Khaled has a question. Very interesting. All right, Ismail. Ismail, what do you got?